Jesus.
The yellow light!
God, I'm walking here! I'm walking!
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on the KTTH smartphone app, back after a Memorial Day weekend. In fact, a long weekend that saw a whole lot of violence in and around Seattle. But don't worry, nothing to see here. Move along, people. That's what's trending.
What's trending? Crime.
I saw this tweet on Sunday, one that I see almost every single day at this point. The Elon Musk algorithm must know what triggers me into just seething anger when I see the same tweet over and over and over again from some Seattle progressive with their head planted firmly in the sand. This time it was a photo of Shoppers downtown Seattle. It was on the corner of, I believe it was 3rd and Pine. And it showed Shoppers going about their day on the long weekend. And the text was something about how everything's popping down here in Seattle. It's thriving, unlike some of those other places. I saw a response to it that said, oh, I was in downtown Bellevue and it was dead. Basically mocking the folks like me and you who point to the significant issues happening in downtown Seattle and Seattle at large. The responses were the typical, Seattle isn't dying. See, take that, conservatives. And yet, a few blocks away from where that photo was taken, a tourist was attacked at random by a stranger who I suspect to be homeless. A few hours after that tweet was sent, what I'm told was a tourist. SPD has not confirmed that, but a source of mine says that's the suspicion. Presumably based on the ID and the witness statement. This tourist was hanging out on 1st Avenue, the 1500 block of 1st Avenue in downtown Seattle, talking with a friend when, according to the witness, per the police report, you had this suspect who had, he was smoking something, and he appeared to have an open beer container, going up to these two and just starting some kind of confrontation. In fact, according to the witness, per the police report, the man put out his cigarette on one of the victims in this. And then all of a sudden, unprovoked, started to hit the victim in the back of the head. He falls over, face first into the cement, the concrete, starting to bleed profusely. This is a guy who was unconscious as a result. Now, a cop happened to be nearby when this went down. The witnesses pointed to the person who was the culprit. He starts to run away. They get into a little bit of a foot pursuit. They do end up making the arrest. The victim goes to Harborview. It appears that he suffered something very serious. They say advanced life-saving measures were taken at a Harborview Medical Center. And I'm assuming that has to do with the impact to this guy's head. Specifically what happened, we're still waiting to get that. It was redacted from the police report because the guy hasn't yet been charged. We expect charges within the next day or so, possibly later today. But this happened over the weekend, and we're supposed to pretend that Seattle is thriving. In West Seattle, also over the long weekend, one man was killed. A teenager was wounded in two separate shootings. The first incident happened late Saturday night. It was right before midnight. There was a party going on at Lincoln Park. No, 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 no. That sucks. Not that Lincoln Park. Not the bad band.
You went there?
I went there. I stole a joke from Brian Suits this morning. But this teen ends up getting shot. Now, thankfully, he's going to be okay. But also, gunfire had hit a nearby home. People who live nearby, they're obviously concerned with what's been going on.
I would say it's concerning.
Gun violence anywhere in the country is a concern.
Thank you. That's very helpful. You really added some flavor there. So that happens. Those two people speaking with Como TV, the reporter said, we need to fill 4 seconds quickly. Go get some man on the street audio. 4 hours after that, This happened early now Sunday morning. A 49-year-old man was shot and killed at the Don Armani boat ramp. And by the time cops arrived, he was dead. No suspects, no arrests in either of these cases. Seattle is thriving, though, correct? All is well in Seattle. Nothing to see here. It's not that big of a deal. What are you complaining about? All is well. There's no issues. What do you keep complaining about? It's a narrative created by right-wing media. Then you have in White Center, there was a triple shooting at the Roxbury Lanes and Casino. It happened Saturday night. Two men and a woman were shot. And by all accounts, because it happened at 10 p.m. in the evening, that's pretty brazen. That's something that only occurs when you think you're going to get away with it.
I like to do what I got to do and then, you know, and get out of here just in case something else goes down like that, though, you know, because I don't want to be in the middle of nothing.
That guy's named Anthony, also speaking with Como. He prefers to go bowling during the day because of the dangers in that area at night. And Brianna, also speaking with Como, says there are so many problems here. And it's consistent.
I've just been walking my dog like normally every night. And every time I walk her, it seems to be arguments in the parking lot. I've never heard of a shooting until last night. But like, yeah, there's always problems here now. Always.
You might not have heard of a shooting specifically at that bowling alley. But we are talking about White Center. Okay. Between White Center and Tukwila, there's certain kinds of crimes that we know are going to occur regularly. But this isn't just regular anymore in the sense that, oh, well, it's that White Center. When you have a shooting, whatever the motives are, we don't know. Also, I haven't seen any information today yet of an arrest or even suspects. But when you have that happening at 10 o'clock in the evening, there is a reason. You generally don't shoot someone in front of a cop, correct? That would be unwise.
Seems very unwise, yes.
Because the cop would immediately be able to intervene and make an arrest.
In theory, yes. Okay.
You also, generally speaking, don't go ahead, unless you're a gang member who's being initiated or you're part of the mob, you generally don't commit this kind of act right in the middle of a busy bowling alley, casino, restaurant, whatever it is, when it's that early in the day, when there are a ton of witnesses, and presumably cops are nearby. Generally don't do that. Why'd they do it this time? Because they know that there are no consequences, not of meaning, at least not to them. Now, you and I, of course, know that certainly with a shooting, there are, in fact, consequences. But when you create a culture of lawlessness, the person who starts committing crimes by simply shoplifting then kind of moves up a ladder and maybe they commit an assault. Don't get punished for that either. So maybe the next time they get a little bit more vicious in their beatdown. No consequences. They go up that ladder once again. Things start to worsen over and over and over again to the point where they feel perfectly comfortable at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night shooting up a place. That is the world in which we now live. And because these are driven by political decisions, the good news is you could reverse course, right? You can change policies. You can change the leaders who are in charge. It doesn't mean that you'll see improvements overnight. It's going to take a very long time to change this culture. But at least we know how to make the fixes. We know what we need to fix. The question is, will the voters make those decisions? Will they make them wisely as we're heading into an election season? And the truth is, I don't know the answer to that. Because every single time I seem to feel some glimmer of hope, which is a big deal for me because I never feel hope about anything. But when I feel just that little glimmer, I end up getting disappointed by decisions that are made, where we put the same person with the same view back into the same position, and we just see a worse result because of it. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Travel.
So the ferry service over the weekend was a total nightmare. Not due to the Memorial Day traffic, because you expect, if you're going out, whether you're taking a ferry or going to the airport or just driving out of town or into town on Memorial Day weekend, you expect there's going to be a certain level of traffic. You're not going to enjoy it. You'll still complain about it, but you expect it. However, there are certain things that you don't expect. Say, for example, and this is just me picking something at random, ferries going out of service because of incompetence from the state.
Why wouldn't you expect that?
That's a fair point. You probably should. In fact, I would argue maybe we should always expect that. Set the expectations low. And so if they meet those low expectations, you're like, yeah, well, I figured it out. There were some people who were waiting, depending on where it was they were going, whether it's like Anacortes to the San Juan Islands, the Clinton ferry stop, between 2 and 4 hours. Some ferry systems, at least coming back from San Juan Islands, just completely shut down for one evening, keeping people there for a while. I suppose there are worse places to be stuck. But this caused a lot of problems. And again, here's the theme. This isn't new. It is totally expected. Here's David speaking with Comer.
This year has been very challenging, to say the least, between lack of people to run it and then maintenance issues and things like that.
Yes. See, we have a staffing crisis made worse by the vaccine requirement. They ended up firing over 130-something individuals specifically from the ferry system. But there already existed a problem because no one really wants to be a ferry worker. We have pushed people away from certain kinds of positions, even though they would make a great living if they worked for the ferry. Granted, you'd have to work for the state, and that I mean, the positive about working for Washington State, it's almost impossible to get fired. I mean, unless you murder someone or don't get vaccinated, you're pretty much guaranteed to keep a job for a very long time. But these problems, again, are created by people, right? This is not something that is unforeseeable. Guess what happens to old ships? They break down. Guess what happens when you don't put money into the system to properly maintain said ships? You make it more likely that they're going to break down. So again, you can change this, right? This is not God saying one day, I'm going to create a hurricane and we're going to stop, or a tidal, whatever happens in the West Coast, and we're going to stop the ferries from service. That's not what's going on here. And I can't help but remember, and God bless the people who fell for this. There was a moment early on in the pandemic, and really a lot of this kind of started before the pandemic, but I remember seeing a little bit more of this happen around the pandemic. All these cities that rely on the ferry system saying, hey, you are going to want the island lifestyle because it's cheaper to live here, depending on where we're talking about. And it's they romanticized it. You're not going to get stuck in traffic driving from Factoria into North Seattle or having to make the drive from Puyallup to Seattle. Just you stay on a ferry. It's perfect. Oh, it's so great. You get to enjoy the scenic views. You can do work actually on your phone or a laptop. It's great. Why don't you come live here? And they did that with Bremerton. Do you remember that? Like there were these big ads that were being poured into that. And some people said, okay. And I said at the time, you're a dummy if you say okay to this. You better be aware that, sure, you might like some aspects of island living, right? Or at least not necessarily purely an island. I suppose you can get around certain places, but relying on a ferry, you're going to regret it. And Damien, who I don't know when he moved to Orcas Island, but he said, yeah, there's been a lot of problems.
The system out here is really broken. And so what it is for us during the week, it's inter-island service. So we have a 1959 boat that is broken. We have crews that are burnt out.
I didn't even know they made boats in 1959. That's how old it is.
Well, when was the Titanic?
1973.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, the movie came out just a few years afterwards.
That is true.
It would be silly to wait a long time to put out a movie on something so spectacular like that. Push the button.
What's trending in the media?
This is one of those stories where it almost feels like we're being trolled by the New York Times. I don't know how many people saw The Little Mermaid this weekend. It killed it at the box office. I have zero interest. I don't remember liking the animated version of it, so I'm not going to rush to go see. I'll eventually see The Little Mermaid. Everyone seemed to enjoy it from an audience perspective, with the exception of some critics. Critically, it's actually not getting great reviews. I think on Rotten Tomatoes, it was somewhere in the 60s. There was one review in the New York Times by a guy named Wesley Morris that is so insane, so over the top, I do have to wonder whether or not we're being trolled here. He complained that there wasn't enough risk and kink in The Little Mermaid. That was the way that the story was promoted on Twitter, and it was in the lead paragraph of this review of The Little Mermaid. And I just want to read the beginning of this article, because again, I was trying to figure out if, you know how folks on the left have redefined a whole bunch of words, right? You got equity has been redefined, violence redefined, white supremacy, gender, what it is to be. Like, okay, fine. Is kink now one of those words?
That was my best guess when I saw this story. So I was hoping for that, at least.
Let's read just the context of it. The new live-action The Little Mermaid is everything nobody should want in a movie. Dutiful and defensive, yet desperate for approval. It reeks of obligation and noble intentions. Joy, fun, mystery, risk, flavor, kink, they're missing. The movie is saying, hey, we tried. Tried not to offend. Appall, challenge, imagine. A crab croons, a gull raps, a sea witch swells to stay puffed proportions. This is not supposed to be a serious event, but it feels made in anticipation of being taken too seriously. Now you can't even laugh at all. It sounds like he's mad that they didn't include any kink between mermaids and the human world. Is that because, right?
I have no idea.
I don't understand.
This guy sounds more joyless than you. That's all I have to say.
I like movies, though. At least I like good movies.
This guy, that is the worst take I've ever heard on anything.
But I haven't seen the movie, so I can't say this for certain. But I certainly understand his point of, we made a movie to try to please, because he's really saying to try to please progressives, which is actually a weird thing to get out of the New York Times. He's saying this is a movie that tried to basically check all the boxes. That's what he's basically saying. I read the whole piece. That's his argument. Fair enough. There are plenty of movies that suck because they try to just inorganically, just in the most contrived way possible, check all the boxes. The kink part is just so weird. And it's happening. And again, this is why I think it's almost a troll. It's happening in the context of the culture wars around putting sexual content in front of kids, or sexualizing kids, or pushing them into decisions about their gender too early, right? That it's just like, let kids be kids, and they don't really need to see some kinky fantasy in The Little Mermaid. Is the crab supposed to make out with the prince? I just don't get what they're talking about here. And it was Tommy Lahren on Fox News, who I thought had a really good interview today about this.
But when these writers, these institutions, these publications tell you who they are, believe them. And again, this is just another notch in the belt with these leftist organizations sexualizing and exploiting children.
I don't understand the impulse to bring sex into children's entertainment outside of, I know sort of a left-wing position has been for a while, and maybe not even exclusively left-wing, but more left than right, certainly, that the culture in this country when it comes to sex is too prudish, right? That has been a long criticism of American culture in a general sense. And maybe that's true. Maybe certainly when you compare it to, I mean, don't even talk about France, my God. But when you compare it to certain countries in Europe, okay, it's, I don't know if I think we should be as sexual as Europe, but there's certainly truth in that both the United States and many European countries treat this differently. Fine. Does that mean you have to include it in children's movies? Especially when it would have no reason to be in this particular movie? Are we supposed to wait for, is there a BDSM scene that's supposed to happen? Is there not enough spanking? I don't, what's the kink? I mean, let's be honest.
I lost my train of thought there a little bit. I wasn't sure where you were going.
Have you ever been attracted to a salmon?
A salmon? No.
Like the really expensive one where they bring...
I mean...
Right? I mean, every once in a while.
Being honest, things that are expensive.
Yeah. I mean, that lobster was looking you at the, you know, kind of asking for it to be picked and eaten. Are we being trolled here? Seriously, are we being trolled? I don't know what to do with the story. I honestly don't know what to do with this. And I saw this trending all weekend. I saw a lot of funny takes in response. And I have to assume, I think the best take, I can't remember who said it, but basically was arguing they're including this kind of language just for the clicks. That the New York Times people would assume is above the clickbait stuff. This is purely made for clickbait because they mentioned this guy, Wesley Morris. He mentions the kink aspect one time that I just read, and that's it. Doesn't follow up, doesn't explain what he intended to mean when he said that, other than I suppose we're supposed to take away from it a literal position of he wanted some sort of kinky sex scene in The Little Mermaid, which isn't even in the original, except, and I don't know if you know this, because maybe you're too young, there was a time in which there was a lot of rumors, maybe they would even qualify as conspiracy theories, that there was sexual imagery put into Disney cartoons by animators, that the only way you would catch it is if you were looking for it. And if you go back and you look at the original cover of the VHS of The Little Mermaid, there is a sex toy that is seen on the cover. And that was a huge thing back when I was a kid, people talking about it. And I can't be the only one who remembers this. So if you're of my age and or a little bit older, so 40 plus, I'm 28, but let's pretend for a moment that I'm 41. Send us a text and confirm I'm not nuts in remembering this. 1-800-465-8770. Do you recall that at all?
I do not.
Is this very uniquely like late 1990s?
Must be.
And I can't remember.
I'm 4 years old, not really worried about it.
I cannot. Well, maybe you should be. You're too uptight.
I guess so.
You're an uptight 4-year-old, apparently.
Yeah, probably so.
You just needed a kinky scene in The Little Mermaid, the cartoon edition.
It's got to be clickbait, right?
That's the only thing I can assume.
Because would you click on it if it said Little Mermaid didn't take enough risks? Would you click on that story?
No.
Exactly.
But people did click for the kink. They were expecting images. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. You're listening to The Jason Brandt Show. Jason Rant's show on this Tuesday after a long weekend. I hope everyone had a memorable Memorial Day. There are so many national stories that have developed over the weekend and so little time to get to it. So let's dive in. Ron DeSantis did an interview with Fox News that triggered some folks on the left. It's kind of silly the way they are purposefully taking him out of context, but pretending that they don't use the exact same language when talking about the right. He said he wanted to take down leftism.
Because everyone knows if I'm the nominee, I will beat Biden and I will serve two terms and I will be able to destroy leftism in this country and leave woke ideology on the dustbin of history.
Woke ideology is what he's referring to, but people wanted to pretend that he's running for president to destroy the Democrat Party, which is not what he's saying. And again, I find it ironic because he is saying woke leftism the way that Democrats say MAGA Republicans, right? Only the left has a tendency to label everything MAGA Republicans. And in this case, DeSantis is being very specific. He's not even saying progressives, right? He's talking about leftist woke culture. And he very clearly has taken a hard campaign position on the war on wokeness or the culture wars having to do with gender identity, in particular when it has to do with kids, when it comes to the anti-racist and DEI madness. He's very clearly making that a central part of his campaign. Ultimately, obviously, voters decide whether or not that's the smart campaign strategy to take. I do think he needs to pivot. And again, this is early on in the campaign. Remember, he literally just announced last week. But what he's going to have to do is pivot to the economic issues as well and talk about how the economy is really what's most important to the average person. There's no doubt, I think, that number one, we're on the right side of the culture wars, at least as defined by those two issues I mentioned. But number two, the most important issue, even if we find the woke stuff to be important, the most important is the economy. How you feel as an individual, as you look at your bank account and whether or not you're struggling in a lot of ways or even just minor ways when going to the grocery store or filling your car up with gas. That's really what's going to matter. And ultimately, what is going to be the plan to get this country economically back to where it was pre-COVID? Unfortunately, Democrats spent so much money, and a lot of Republicans did too, by the way, spent so much money, created this inflationary crisis. COVID obviously played a huge role. The Democrat policies that shut down the economy way longer than it needed to played an even bigger role. And people remember that. People remember that. Voters remember who told them they couldn't go to work, who couldn't send their kids to school, who had to get a vaccine that doesn't actually stop the spread of COVID in order to get a paycheck. Again, Democrats are very good at branding, and sometimes that's great for them. Other times it's not, because they're the ones who branded themselves around the COVID policies that in retrospect turned out to be completely, completely ineffective. There's some attempt to spin and pretend that what they did was right at the time, but it wasn't right at the time. We learned very early on that what it was that they were pursuing was wrong, was against what the science said, and they did it anyway. I think most people say early on in the pandemic, of course, we're willing to give some folks some room to make an error when they're doing it with our best interests in mind and based on a brand new virus that was spreading without any therapeutics. But it became quickly discovered that it doesn't spread outside, that kids are barely impacted at all, and that it really was like the flu for most people. And yet they still continued with their policies long after we learned all of that. People remember. And people remember that Ron DeSantis, despite being attacked for his role during COVID in Florida, Florida did really, really well. Florida is disproportionately impacted from a population standpoint with the folks who are most at risk of COVID or from COVID. And yet Florida did just as well as any other state that closed everything down. So people remember that. And there are a lot of people who see Ron DeSantis and say, hey, this is a young guy. This is a guy who's principled. He's passionate. Maybe I don't agree with him on everything, but he seems like a good guy. And what he's going to benefit from was exactly what Donald Trump benefited from in certain circumstances early on in the first campaign, which is the media is going after him to a degree that is not only unreasonable, but just unhinged. And that turns people off, because at some point they're going to step back and say, OK, he's not that bad. My God, why are you treating him like he's Satan? And by the way, how can he be the biggest threat when you previously told us that Donald Trump was the biggest threat? Man, so weird that all the biggest threats keep happening to be the people who you're running against. It's weird how that works. They're going to catch on. On The View, Whoopi Goldberg just went absolutely nuts. It's very, very, very weird the way she goes after Ron DeSantis.
We have time for this. Hey, Ron,
Yes.
You know, being asleep as you are and have been for quite some time. See, many of us have been awake this whole time.
Okay.
We don't have any choice. We don't have choice as women to rest up and be asleep and see things disappear. We don't have time for that.
Oh,
so
okay.
You want to fight all of us? Because you're going to be fighting your own women as well. Because they're not going to take this ridiculousness that you are thrusting off you. It's not like they're voting for this. You are making these decisions for your state. We're watching you, Ron.
Ooh, she's watching you, Ron, who apparently she thinks no woman voted for him, despite winning two elections now. And the last one by double digits. He's incredibly, incredibly, incredibly popular. He's a Republican who turned a purple state red. But we're supposed to believe that all women hate him because he's a threat. It's a big threat. And then you've got the debt ceiling talks. It seems to face a tough path. We had an announcement over the long weekend that the speaker, Kevin McCarthy, finally got a deal done, an agreement with the White House on raising the debt ceiling. This would, according to McCarthy, create a what they're calling a cap federal baseline of spending over the course of the next couple of years. You can't spend more than X amount of dollars. And on top of that, there are some aspects to the bill that include work requirements or show that you are looking for work. People are lying when they talk about the work requirements. We talked about it on the show either last week or the week before. You've got folks like Ashley Allison over at CNN presuming that this is just an attack on the poor. Just an attack on the poor. And we're making these broad like positions and proclamations that the quote-unquote poor don't want to work, that they want to be poor.
Well, I think it's important to note that also Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, all staying safe, not being touched at all. I think the Republicans' obsession with work requirements are offensive to poor people, assuming
offensive
that people want to be poor and don't have the fight inside of them to work hard. It's offensive, and I think it will ultimately come a backlash. But I
there
think the
be.
Way that they were able to negotiate and protect veterans, people who are homeless, is really important.
It's just so silly. No one finds it offensive. In fact, if anything, her comments are offensive because she's saying that the quote-unquote poor don't even want to look for work, that they're not capable of looking for work. All the work requirement does is say that if you are able-bodied and you are not pregnant and you're not currently on some other federal program, that you have to be looking for work. And on top of that, if you're not on another federal program, you have to either commit X amount of hours, I think it was 20 hours a month, to working part-time or to community service. Everyone has that time. If you don't have a job, if you literally don't have a job and you're not looking for work, you've got 20 hours in a month to either find part-time work or contribute to the community for 20 hours. Sorry, I don't buy any excuse otherwise. And it's really important to understand that this does not apply to people who are currently enrolled in another federal program, such as unemployment. If you are collecting unemployment, you are required to show that you are looking for a job. And beyond simply saying, I'm looking for a job, and I applied here and there, you don't even really have to show that you are working hard at applying for another job. So they are just flatly lying to you about this work requirement. And it makes sense because the Democrats are trying desperately to blame Republicans for a potential default. And Kevin McCarthy on Fox News this morning said it's been really difficult working with the Democrats.
Well, normally when you make when you come to an agreement with two different parties, you have people on both parties vote for it. But the difficulty that's different than any time before is the Democrats will tell you there's nothing in the bill for them.
Nothing.
The president numerous times, he kept asking for tax increases, new government programs. And I just said no. And he says, well, there's nothing in it for us to vote for.
So weird. It's so odd. And I think he's right. Now, whether or not this gains the support it needs on the Republican side or the Democrat side, I don't know. It seems right now a pretty tough go because it doesn't go far enough in cutting spending. And that this is one of those Kevin McCarthy is making a big deal out of something that isn't actually a good deal for Republicans or for this country. You have the Freedom Caucus saying that they're against this. You've got the far progressives, the AOCs of the world, who are also against this. I don't know if it has the votes yet on the House side. I just don't know if it's there yet. And you've got Chip Roy coming out today and Nancy Mace. Two people, one on the Freedom Caucus, another one is more seen as kind of a moderate Republican member of Congress, both saying they're voting no. They don't think it's a good deal. And they'd like to see the ban or well, not ban, a cap on federal spending go past 2 years. The spending freeze needs to go well past that. And they argue there's no real substantive policy reforms in this bill. So this thing is not a guarantee to pass. And that's when it becomes a little bit trickier for Republicans to justify their vote if it leads to a potential default. Now, we're further away from a default than some people would have you believe. We do have the money coming in to pay for what's owed. Not to pay down our debt, but to pay for what's owed. So people aren't going to be missing out on their checks. But this is where if you've got a deal that's already announced on the Republican side and you've got the Republicans saying, the leader of the Republicans on the House side saying, hey, look, we got a deal, and then Republicans say no to it, then it's going to hurt them politically. But alas, again, it is the world of politics and anything can change. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show. I have a big announcement that I will be making next week. I hope you will tune in for it. Some of you got a sneak peek at that big announcement if you went to the Freedom Series, where I gave it out exclusively there. Everyone seemed excited. I hope you'll be excited as I am, but we'll make that announcement next week. And of course, if you're not able to catch it when it airs on this show, you can either become a podcast subscriber, which, by the way, you should do anyway, or you can go ahead and follow me on my social media channels because I'll be making the announcement there as well. But the next one will be on this radio show next week. The day, I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm working with the TV side as well on when we want to do this, but I'll let you know. I remain shocked still by the power of the Bud Light boycott. Seriously, I never thought it would be this significant. And in a lot of ways, it's because I saw it, as you did, starting online, having to do with Dylan Mulvaney, whom most people, I don't think, even knows who that is. But this was one of those cultural war issues that exploded. And more people were turned off by the partnership with Dylan Mulvaney, who I think is offensive towards women, than most people anticipated, certainly more than I anticipated. And we now have new data coming in from Bump Williams Consulting and Nielsen IQ. They gave sales data to Newsweek for the week ending May 20th, so 10 days ago. And it says volume sales by volume are down 29.5% compared to last year. Sales are down 25.7% for revenue compared to the same time last year. This is, as OutKick points out, it says no matter how you slice the data, it's a bloodbath. Sales have fallen off a cliff. Anheuser-Busch's stock is getting crushed since the start of April. Beers are selling for just pennies, and there's no end in sight. And this could be one of those issues that Bud Light needs to just accept and then move forward, maybe leaning into the wokeness, leaning into the Dylan Mulvaneys of the world, that nothing that they can do will bring these people back. I don't know if that's the case. I certainly know what they've done to this point has not been effective because it doesn't seem legitimate. It doesn't seem like it's coming from the right place versus just trying to do some damage control. I think when they partnered with Dylan Mulvaney, they were sending a very clear message to their demographic that currently enjoys their beer that, hey, you know what? Politically, we're just not on the same page to the point where we're willing to partner not with a transgender person, but with specifically Dylan Mulvaney, given all of the controversies around this TikTok star's personality, which, again, I find to be not because of the trans issue, but because I just think this is woman face in this case. I actually don't think that this is a legitimate issue. I think that Dylan Mulvaney is a narcissist who is taking positions and acting out as like this 1950s housewife, as this Lucille Ball wannabe, just for the clicks and for attention. I don't think this is a legitimate person who feels like they're born in the wrong body, not like other transgender people, at least, because most transgender people aren't going out of their way to beg for this kind of attention. And most people don't give it because it's just, it's wrong to play into the narcissism. And yet that's exactly what Dylan Mulvaney is doing. But we live in a world in which this is a big issue. It should be. I think it's patently unfair that we're pretending that there's no difference between men and women, between trans women and women. And yet we still have voices on the left pretending otherwise. There's this USA Today sports columnist named Nancy Armour, or Armour. And her recent column calls out Sam Ponder, who is an ESPN analyst, who came out, I believe last week, towards the end of last week, basically saying that it's not fair towards women to have to compete with transgender women because transgender women are biologically male. And instead of having a decent, honest, good faith discussion about that particular issue, most likely because they can't win that issue, Nancy Armour decides to just go after Sam Ponder and everyone who holds a position that it's not fair, calling out the, she says, the quote unquote quest for fairness is a sham. And that this entire movement to ban trans athletes from women's sports was about, quote, hate, fear, and ignorance. She writes, don't be fooled by people who screech about fairness to cloak their bigotry towards transgender girls and women. The transgender girls and women who have the audacity to play sports in particular. This is and always was about hate, fear, and ignorance. I don't know anyone who's ignorant in this conversation except for the folks who pretend there's no difference between athletes at their peak, male athletes versus female athletes at their peak. We're not talking about like some four-year-old who's playing t-ball where there isn't any specific advantage for a boy or a girl. We're talking about teenagers, post-puberty. We're talking about adults. And very clearly there are differences. I saw a report last week claiming that there's been no study done about transgender athletes. That's not true. That's not true at all. We know exactly what's going on. The ignorance is coming from the folks on the left who pretend that there's no unfair advantage. I don't know anyone who just flat out hates transgender athletes in the world in which we're discussing. I don't know of any athlete who's come out and said that this is unfair, saying it because they hate trans people or fear trans people. I don't hear that coming from the voices of the athletes who are impacted. Do you? I hear a lot of folks who are flatly saying, this is not fair to me, that generations of women fought for my right to be able to compete for scholarships, for jobs, for the attention of professional leagues, and that you have one transgender athlete, whether or not they win everything or just place or even not place, they took a spot away from someone who is a biological girl or woman. And I don't hear hate or fear coming from their voices. I hear anger over the position that they find themselves in. I hear sadness because they're being impacted negatively. But I don't hear hate and fear. The people who are pushing that on you, they're doing it because they want to silence you. But the thing is, when you call everyone a bigot simply for holding a different position than you do. In fact, I would argue that folks on our side hold the majority opinion on this. When you call everyone a bigot, it doesn't mean anything anymore. It doesn't sting the same way. And that's why I think you're hearing more female athletes coming out and saying that this is patently unfair. The bullying campaign to silence, not working. And I hope that stays the reality. 1-800-465-8770 for your texts. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.